Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, on this 20th of March, 2010, taking you for the next 90 minutes, special 90-minute program, as we'll be running these programs for the next couple of weeks or so, considering March Madness and also the start of the upcoming baseball season, which kicks off in a couple of weeks, April 4th, Yankees Red Sox, Fenway Park. But we'll begin with the madness. Day one, classic. Day two, so-so. I mean, day two after Thursday. I mean, you had to come down a little bit from that, just from all those upsets and just those wild buzzer beaters that you saw on Thursday. Yesterday, last night was the biggest upset. And listen, this was not, to me, this was one of the easiest games I had in terms of picking the first round. You know, to be honest with you, putting the 1 versus 16, putting those games aside, 2 versus 15s. Temple and Cornell, I mean, listen, Temple probably was underseeded at number 5, probably should have been a little bit higher. Cornell is by no means a number 12 seed. You know, I said on the show Monday how legitimate Cornell was. I watched them push Kansas, who was considered to be the best team in the country, at Kansas to the limit. They had Kansas on the ropes. That game is no shock to me whatsoever that Temple lost that game. I saw the brackets come out. I said, Temple's going to be one and done. That's the first thing I saw, one and done. There was no way to me that Temple was going to that Temple was going to beat Cornell. Cornell, that team just shoot. That team, you know, that's a team that's won as many road games on neutral sites than any team in the country. Okay, than any team in the country. So you take that in consideration. You know, this team is not afraid of anybody. And again, I had them in my Sweet 16. I had them facing Kentucky, and I think that I had them facing Kentucky, and I wouldn't be surprised if they gave Kentucky all that they could handle. So that was your major upset of the day and night sessions in terms of the NCAA tournament. Again, Missouri. Look at some of these games. Missouri beating Georgia Tech. I mean, Georgia Tech beating Missouri is not an upset. When you look at some of these scores, Georgia Tech beating Oklahoma State is not an upset. I mean, you had some close games. Michigan State fans, I mean, you were sweating. I was sweating. Michigan State almost got taken out by a game New Mexico State team, but Michigan State does what it has to do as far as getting to the next round. For the umpteenth time in a row. I mean, they're good for one game. I mean, Michigan State's going to get it's really rare that Tom Izzo teams lose in the first round. You saw Xavier win that, and I think this is a great accomplishment. Xavier, which is a mid-major, has won at least a first-round game 4 straight years. Just shows you how consistent they've been over the course of recent memory. But the big story is, to me, in this tournament is the Big East and how the Big East has taken it on the chin. You know, Marquette gone, Notre Dame gone, Louisville gone, and, of course, the big one on Thursday and up to this point has been the upset of the tournament, and that's Georgetown going down. Georgetown, you know, this is what Georgetown was over the course. If you didn't watch Georgetown a lot this season, this is what Georgetown was over the course of the season. They were a team that was capable of beating anybody, and they were also a team that was capable of losing to anybody. And for them to go out there, now, before I rip Georgetown, I'm going to rip Georgetown because they deserve to be ripped. Okay, yeah, number 3 seed, lose to a 14, you're going to get knocked. There's no 14 seed that's that good. So they deserve to be ripped. But before I do that, give all the credit in the world to Ohio. Ohio came out there They were not the least bit intimidated by Georgetown. They made shots. I mean, they really took it to Georgetown. That wasn't the case. I mean, Georgetown had a lot of turnovers, but for the most part, Ohio took the fight to them. Ohio dominated that game. That was not a fluke. You know, that was not a, you know, buzzer beater. That was not a guy, you know, injuries. That was a thorough beating by Ohio. Ohio looked, that's how Georgetown should have beaten Ohio. I mean, that was a third. I mean, that Georgetown got into the game second half, late second half. Georgetown, you know, kind of got to under 10. You thought they were going to make a run after that, but it was not to be. Ohio just kept making 3-pointer after 3-pointer. I mean, they had to shoot close to 60%. Did Ohio, but give them all the credit in the world. I mean, they shot the lights out. They took Georgetown, just never looked like they were into that game. They never looked out of sync from the start. And Georgetown, the thing that let Georgetown out is his defense. I mean, Georgetown's defense was, you know, atrocious. I mean, you went out there, you allowed teams to shoot close to 60% from the field, over well over 50% from the three-point line. That's how you get upset. I mean, the three-point line is the ultimate equalizer in this tournament. I mean, That's how you can get picked off if you are a favorite when another team shoots the lights out. That's exactly what Ohio did. With that being said, there's no excuse for Georgetown losing to an Ohio team. I mean, losing to a team in Ohio that, you know, this is not what Gonzaga was when they first came out. They're not Vermont as far as being. They're not Richmond. I know Richmond lost. I'm talking about teams that have been giant killers over the course of recent memory. They're not with, you know, Princeton. You know, teams that can shock you or that can scare you. They're not on that level. And they haven't won an NCAA tournament game in 27 years. You can't go out there first round coming off a year where you didn't even make the NCAA tournament and get that kind of effort defensively. And the effort was not there defensively. Georgetown didn't guard anybody in that game. Didn't guard anybody. So Georgetown goes out there and just, you know, absolutely lays an egg. I mean, they lay an absolute egg. And if you're, I mean, listen, I'm not screaming for John Thompson III's job. He got him to the Final Four 3 years ago. But the last 3 years after that have been a lot left to be desired. Look at 2008, Davidson. Okay, Stephon Curry was arguably the best player in the tournament that year. That happens. You know, guy gets hot, and, you know, you saw Davidson almost beat Kansas that year. So, hey, that, you know, you can tolerate that. Everybody loses a first-round game every so often. It happens to Duke, having to North Carolina 1 year. It happens. That's where that's just the nature of the college basketball. But you can't go out here first-round 1 year, not make the tournament next year, and then losing the first round in the following year. Yeah, I mean, Georgetown's better than that. They're a better program than that. They get better players than that. They have 3 McDonald's All-Americans on that team. They have a lottery pick on that team right there. If he came out and decided to come out, he's a lottery pick, maybe top 10, maybe even top 5, okay? And there are rumors of saying that he probably won't come out, which is the right move. But if he were to come out, he is an absolute lottery pick. They have at least 3 pros on that team from what I see. So you cannot come out there and just lay an egg like that. You're gonna get killed. And the media is gonna be all over. You're going to get killed by the media and by Washington Post and whoever, and rightfully so. I'll say this, I mean, John Thompson III, next year is a big year for Georgetown basketball. I'm telling you right now, they better be in the Sweet 16 next year. Because that's the nature of college basketball. when you, you know, especially when you have some success, especially when you're shown, you've shown the ability to recruit. It is not good. See, Georgetown would have been much better off had they had a big year, been, you know, top five ranked in terms of teams, had they went, you know, won the Big East, they'd be much better off than losing a game like this. So people would say, oh, they just got shocked, and, you know, it's just one of those things. But they were. I mean, this is the Georgetown team we saw all year long. We saw a team that was inconsistent. We saw a team that, again, that played when they wanted to play and took certain nights off. I mean, there's no getting around it. You don't lose to Rutgers in South Florida without taking nights off. But you get up for Duke, you get up for the Connecticut's of the world, you know, you get up for those teams, but you lose, you know, get up for Syracuse in the Big East tournament. So it's going to be a major problem. Again, they come out there next year and get bounced in the first round and don't make it to the Sweet 16. John Thompson III is going to start feeling some heat. Because Georgetown's at that level where, you know, they're not Duke, they're not North Carolina, they're not UCLA. Of course, they're not at that level. Kansas, you know, there's certain tiers of college basketball at that, you know, that level. You know, certain teams are, you know, North Carolina's at that level to where Final Four can be considered a failure, or getting to the Elite Eight can be considered a failure. That's not the case with Georgetown. If Georgetown gets to an Elite Eight or gets to a Sweet 16, it is 99% of the time it's going to be considered to be a success. And that's what about 95% of programs in college basketball. Sweet 16 is a big time year. Elite Eight is a great year. You know, Final Four is just a dream. But Georgetown is past that level of first round of getting into the tournament and also in only winning and not winning a game or only winning one game. They're past that level. They're at that Sweet 16 level. They get to the Sweet 16, they're fine. If they don't, people start scratching their heads. And you look at these teams that fell out of the Big East. Yeah, the Big East was the best conference in the country, but there's been a constant theme. And some of these teams have lost in general. It's been a constant theme. Notre Dame, up and down, had a late run, but for the most part were inconsistent over the course of the season. Marquette lost a bunch of close games. Guess what? Marquette loses another close game in their first round against Washington. Villanova almost lost. I mean, they're struggling right now. You have Vanderbilt out of a soft SEC. Again, start off well, but did not finish well. They get knocked out. They had an uneven team. So teams that have been inconsistent for the most part, and who just didn't, you know, who didn't play well from November to March, have struggled badly in this tournament to start off. It has been the one thing that you've been able to take out of the tournament. And I like the tournament so far. I think the tournament has had a good mix of upsets, but you don't want too many upsets. You don't want too many. I mean, you don't want to see Old Dominion and St. Mary's Sweet 16 matchup. I mean, you don't want to see that come next week. You still want to see Baylor and Villanova, at least Baylor and Villanova. You don't want to see St. Mary's in Old Dominion. So it's had enough upsets, but not too many major upsets. No, you still have the first. You still have all, with the exception of Georgetown. You only have two of the top 16 seeds that are gone. Of course, Vanderbilt losing, Georgetown losing, and everybody else is still intact. You know, you have Syracuse wins easily, Kentucky, Duke, Kansas. You get all the number two seeds were relatively impressive in terms of what they did. Georgetown being the only number three seed that's out. So you still have a nice group of teams that are in the tournament as far as not having too many upsets. You can't, that will destroy a tournament. You want quality matchups going from the Sweet 16 on. You're going to get great matchups in the Elite Eight, but you want quality matchups in the Sweet 16 as well. That is not, I mean, that's just not, you know, that's not good for a fan, certainly not good for CBS, having these low, having two mid-major teams matched up with each other. You can get one, you can live with one, but you can't have two mid-major teams matched up with each other on a Thursday night prime time coming up this week. Yeah, you can't have it. But again, a good start to the NCAA tournament. Been more exciting than I thought it was going to be. Great Thursday, ho-hum Friday, but we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens this weekend as 3/4 of the tournament will be over by the time come Sunday night, which is amazing how fast the tournament goes by, but that will be the case as the NCAA tournament continues on. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Again, 90 minutes, we're going to noon. Up until the tournament kicks off, I think the first game probably won't be till like 1 o'clock. I'll say, and I'm guessing who's going to kick off the nation. Because Kentucky plays late. They normally like to put a prime team, a team that you know, kicking off the start of the game. Of course, you have the East region. All regions will be playing, but you have Kentucky, New Mexico, Washington, New Mexico. They'll probably kick off the nation. I'm guessing Villanova St. Mary's will probably kick off the nation. Consider Villanova probably do. They'll probably do Villanova St. Mary's out of the South bracket. I was guessing that that will probably be the game that kicks off the nation. Villanova, well known, was in the Final Four last year. Kentucky Wake Forest game is going to be late. I don't think they're going to do Kansas. Kansas is the Midwest, so they're not going to start off that early. They could do Kansas, but I think they'll probably do Villanova St. Mary's to kick off the coverage today. Today, again, one of the best days in all of college basketball. It'll go from basically 1 p.m. to midnight as far as all the action goes. It should be a lot of exciting action coming up today for the Final Four March Madness. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, Tiger returns and a new owner in the NBA. We'll talk about that and also the playoff run on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn. You can hit me up at Twitter.com/WilliamGerald or find me at William Gerald on Facebook.com as well to have any comments or questions that you may have. Number 5 Temple became the latest high seed to fall as they were defeated by Cornell in East Region action 78-65. Cornell will face number 4 seed Wisconsin in the second round. It is the first time in 12 years that an Ivy League team has won an NCAA tournament game. East Region action also. West Virginia all over Morgan State 77-50. Clemson falls 86-78. Again, Wisconsin gets by 53-49 as they were there. Just Wofford gets by Wofford 53-49. See Missouri over Clemson 86-78. West Region action, Gonzaga over defeats Florida State 67-60. Pittsburgh all over Oakland 89-66. South Region, you had Duke over Arkansas Pine Bluff 73-44. Purdue gets by Siena 72-64. Texas A&M 69. Utah State 53. California 77, Louisville 62. Midwest, Xavier gets his fourth straight first-round win as they defeat Minnesota 65-54. Georgia Tech over Oklahoma State 64-59. Maryland over Houston, 89-77, and Michigan State gets by New Mexico State, 70-67. Of course, Maryland will play Michigan State tomorrow in Midwest action. NBA scores: Cleveland 92, Chicago 85. LeBron James becomes the youngest player in NBA history to score 15,000 points, surpassing Kobe Bryant with that honor. Kobe Bryant, LeBron James was only 25 years old. Kobe was 27 when it happened. Atlanta in overtime, 93-92 over Charlotte. Oklahoma City crushes Toronto, 115-89. Boston 94, Houston 87. And Lakers over Minnesota, 104-96. San Antonio all over Golden State, 147-116. Other winners in the association included Phoenix, Sacramento, Portland, Indiana, and the New York Knicks as well. After the 10 o'clock hour, welcome back to the latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. Of course, Tiger Woods announced officially that he will indeed be back at Augusta come April 8th. That's when he will make his return. And there's no shock at all that he's coming back to coming back to the Masters. I had a question. It was a question a couple of weeks ago where, you know, which choice would he make? Would he choose to be rusty and come back at a place that was more of a safe haven, more, you know, to his liking as far as comfort, or would he choose to come back to a media circus at Bay Hill and get some extra reps in as far as playing goes? And he chose the former, to no surprise. I mean, this is where he won his first major. And more importantly, even more than that, you know, forget all that nostalgic type nonsense about, you know, his first major. And this is about Augusta. This is about the Masters, security, and just how the media would not be able to climb all over Tiger Woods. This is about Tiger Woods, you know, feeling again, you know, be basically barricaded. And Augusta, again, they have their own set of rules. They run everything. The television networks bow down to Augusta. They wouldn't care if the Masters wasn't even televised. That's the club. I'm not talking about the PGA, but the club. That's how they are. Tigers are feel more comfortable being in that setting. That's what happens. People talk about hecklers. A heckler, he'll have a heckler for about 5 minutes. Okay, a heckler will get. Heckler will yell something out, and I guarantee you, in within 5 minutes, that guy will be out. Will be out of the tournament, off the golf course. They don't tolerate that kind of stuff there. That is the ultimate golf club. Now, I mean, that is the definition of, you know, that's the definition of a golf club. Period. Augusta is, you know, in the South. That's a lot of things that are happening at clubs where, you know, you get a lot of yelling and you see how excited it can be at Bethpage Black when they get the U.S. Open. That kind of stuff is not happening at Augusta. Now, rah-rah stuff is more, you know, simple hand claps. I mean, it gets exciting when you're watching the action, but they are not tolerating people, you know, cursing at Woods or people yelling at Woods or any sign. That stuff is not happening. Tiger knows that. The people around him know that. Is why he made this choice to come back here instead of coming back at Bay Hill, which would have been basically a walk from his house in Orlando. I mean, it's just that simple. There's no getting around. The Tiger wants to be comfortable. He doesn't want to hear anything about questions about what his wife and the whole situation. He said in his eyes and his mind that situation is done. I mean that he's been there, and done that. As far as addressing the media, so he now, Tiger Woods, just wants to focus strictly on golf. And listen, I think he probably should have came back a couple weeks earlier to get the extra time in. I don't think he's going to win. The idea that he's a favorite, I understand the Tiger Woods aura. I understand that he, you know, still is the greatest player in the game. But to come back from a layoff where you haven't basically haven't played in almost 6 months and try to win the Masters. I mean, forget about it. I don't care who you are, Tiger Woods or Bobby Jones in his prime, it's not going to happen. I mean, golf is a tough sport as it is when you're playing well and when you are playing, you know, on your regular routine. So, I mean, I can see Woods winning a U.S. Open. I can see Woods still having a big year. I cannot see him winning the Masters. And he would not, forget about being a betting favorite. I wouldn't choose him if you're a golfer, I don't see how any reliable golf announcer or analyst is choosing him to win this tournament. And those are the people who are choosing him. It's not just the bookies or the betting lines in Las Vegas. You have people out there, these golf guys, these quote-unquote experts who are choosing Tiger Woods to win this as a favorite and to win this tournament. And he's going to be the favorite going to every major from here on out until he can't play anymore. But this is a different type of circumstance. You know, this is a guy, again, who's coming off a long layoff where he hasn't played golf at all. He's hitting some golf balls on the range or practicing with Hank Haney is different than playing in competition. It's all different. It's not even comparable. You can't simulate competition, crowd, your opponent, the pressure. That cannot be simulated through practice at all. So I question, you know, him coming back at the Masters and not getting at least one tournament under his belt before that. As far as him coming back, I have no questions about that at all. There's been people who he took some shots from the international press on his comeback. And even from the American press to an extent on his comeback. Listen, what do you expect Tiger Woods? First of all, if you think that this comeback, how quickly he come back, takes anything away from the apology, you were a fool to begin with in believing that his apology was legitimate. Okay? His apology was to get this thing over with as quickly as possible so he can move on with the rest of his life. Right? That was what his apology was. It's a public relations thing it's more about public relations than anything. But putting that aside, what do you want Tiger Woods to do? I mean, you want Tiger Woods to get up in the morning with his two kids, you know, take the kids to school, then go to marriage counseling at, you know, 10 o'clock, come from marriage counseling, you know, 11, 12 o'clock, have lunch, then go to sex addicts therapy at, 1 o'clock, then another set of marriage. I mean, what do you want? You want him to do is spend his whole life in counseling, what, for 24/7? And then go pick up the kids. I mean, the guy is a golfer. He's a professional golfer. He eats, sleeps, drinks, golfs. This is what he does. He's in the prime of his career. You know, he's not going to see. Let's say he had taken off till August. Let's say he skips the first three majors. Okay, so in five and a half months. His life is going. He's going to save his life. He's going to clear up. He's going to clean up everything that's going on in his life in five extra months. I mean, give me a break. You know, it is what it is. Cheat on his wife, and you know, let's move on. Again, and listen, I blame the people who think this way. This takes away from the legitimacy of his apology. I blame you from the standpoint of believing him. I don't know how many guys, and I've talked about it, I've pointed out names, Chris Russo, Michael Wilbon, who were moved by Tiger Woods' apology. Moved by his apology. Not just believed him, were moved by the apology. Let me give you a break. I'm not going to sit up here and kill Woods on coming back, you know, a couple months after he makes this announcement. When he made the announcement, I'm not going to sit up here and die. I mean, there's no way. made the announcement back in, I believe, in December. I'm not going to sit up and kill him. He's a golfer. That's what he does. That's what he does. What he's great at doing. The guy does not, I don't know you want him to be miserable. If you want him to be miserable, then have him not play golf for the next 4 or 5 months as other players are winning majors. That's misery. You want to be miserable. But I have no problem with Woods coming back. I think it's absolutely, golf in the worst way needs him back. The ratings, nobody's even cared about golf the last couple of months. Again, he comes back, and there hasn't been any majors, so it's not like it's not that big a deal that he's been missing, the Phoenix Opens and these, some of these other tournaments, the AT&T Pro-Am. So that's not a big deal, but you need him back for Augusta in the worst way. So we'll see how that works out with Woods. Again, he should not be the favorite. By any stretch of imagination, he should not be the favorite to win this tournament. It's going to be I would be shocked if he won. Even for him, I'd be shocked if he won this tournament. But we'll see come April 8th through 11th. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We just hit the top of the hour, 11 o'clock in the a.m. on the East Coast. When I come back, we'll talk about the NBA's new owner, and we'll look into the Rookie of the Year. We'll look into the Rookie of the Year race. We'll talk about that. And much, much more still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Temple becomes the latest high seed to fall. Number 5 Temple was defeated by Cornell, who came in at the number 12 seed, 78-65. According to the East Region, Cornell will face Wisconsin in the second round. Other East Region action: Wisconsin defeats Wofford 53-49. Missouri over Clemson 86-78. West Virginia crushes Morgan State 77-50. West Region action: Gonzaga 67, Florida State 60, Pittsburgh 89, Oakland 66. South Region: Duke 73, Arkansas Pine Bluff 44. Texas A&M 69, Utah State 53, Purdue 72, Siena 64, Cal 77, and Louisville 62. In the Midwest, Michigan State survives a scare as they hold on to defeat number 12 seed New Mexico State 70-67. Kellen Lucas had a big game for Michigan State. Xavier 65, Minnesota 54. It's fourth straight year that Xavier has won at least one tournament game. Georgia Tech gets by Oklahoma State 64-59, and Maryland over Houston 89-77. NBA scores: Cleveland 92, Chicago 85. LeBron James becomes the youngest player in NBA history to score 15,000 points, surpassing Kobe Bryant. Atlanta wins in overtime over Charlotte on a buzzer beater, 93-92 in overtime. Oklahoma City 115 to Toronto 115. Toronto 89, Boston 94, Houston 87. Lakers over Minnesota 104-95. Lakers get their fifth straight win. San Antonio crushes Golden State 147-116. Other winners in the association include Phoenix, Sacramento, Portland, Indiana, and also the New York Knicks. Of course, to talk of the NBA this week, Michael Jordan becomes the first majority ex-athlete to own the majority of a professional sports franchise. You have guys like Magic Johnson who are basically figureheads in terms of ownership with teams. Magic, Jerry Buss, and Jeannie Buss, and the whole Buss family calls the shots there. Jordan, of course, will own 80% of the Charlotte Bobcats. He bought Bob Johnson's share of the team. A couple things about this that kind of trouble you if you're a Charlotte fan or if you're an NBA fan in general. I understand the brand name Michael Jordan. We all know who Michael Jordan is and what Michael Jordan does from a marketing standpoint. But the marketing aspect of the team means absolutely zero if the product on the floor does not equate to what you're trying to market. And, you know, they have a pretty good team right now. I mean, Charlotte is going to be a dangerous team in the playoffs. We all know this. But I'm thinking into the future. I'm thinking, you know, I mean, you don't build your team around. I don't think you build your team. They don't have that one superstar player that they can build their team around. They just don't. I mean, Steven Jackson's probably – Gerald Wallace probably the best all-around player to me. He's more of a role player. Steven Jackson is a nice complimentary player to me on a championship-caliber team. Those are not players that you think into the future you're building with going into the future. A couple problems. The one, he says he wants to – Jordan wants to be involved in the personnel decisions. And, you know, Daniel Snyder, Jerry Jones, it doesn't work. I mean, you can't have your owner in any sport, not just basketball, being involved in any shape or way or form in terms of making personnel decisions. Now, if he doesn't want to pay a guy a certain amount of money, that's his right. He owns a team. I understand that. I'll never criticize an owner for not wanting to pay a guy what I will, but I understand that particular involvement from because financially, okay, luxury tax stuff. Decisions had to be made about those kind of things. That's fine. And he's an owner, it's a business. Yeah, he has to do what he has to do from that standpoint. But when you start talking about, you know, choosing players, that's a problem. I think Jordan has not proven to me that he is capable of doing that. Even if he was the owner, it was strictly a general manager. His track record as a general manager is average at best. A lot of people want to call it mediocre. I'll say average. I mean, he missed on Kwame Brown, but you know what? That draft was not great to begin with, and everybody else who would have had the number one pick would have took Kwame Brown anyway. So that, I'm not going to kill him for that particular draft pick, for that particular draft lead. Paul Gasol was probably the best player to come out of that draft. Paul Gasol was, I think, probably the fifth or sixth choice. He was lottery pick, but it took years for us to know that 2001 draft was not a strong draft, and it took years for us to know who was even any good coming out of that draft. I'm not gonna kill him just for that Kwame Brown decision. His track record is not as bad as you think it is. I mean, he did get the Wizards out of salary cap purgatory, allowed them to at least for a 3 or 4 year period be relevant again in terms of making the playoffs and producing some entertaining basketball with Gibbon Arenas and the whole 9 yards. But, you know, he did hire Darren Walker to be the coach. He did hire Matt Doherty basically to be coach of North Carolina. And I say that because the only reason why you see a guy with no prior tournament experience making an NCAA tournament get the University of North Carolina job is because you're friends and you're close to Michael Jordan. That's what happened with Matt Doherty getting that job. And that brings me to my second point about Jordan and one of the things that he said that he was going to do, and that would involve his family with having roles within the organization, which to me is a major problem. You cannot have nepotism within a business. I'm telling you, it does not work in sports in general. It doesn't work. You know, I don't like it when it's coaches, and I definitely won't like it when it comes to running an organization. And to me, the biggest thing Jordan has to fight, other than the other 29 teams in the NBA or whatever, is his own ego. I mean, how much is Jordan willing to sacrifice of his ego, of his ego and time in order to make this thing work? Because to me, I mean, Jordan is the ultimate control figure. And him employing his family is a perfect example of control. So you employ your family members because you know what? You don't want anybody talking about you within the organization because they don't know they don't know you can be a Jordan. I mean, you can be a Jordan, you can be an in-law, they don't know. That's what that's all about. I mean, this is how Jordan thinks. And again, that kind of mentality will have Michael Jordan selling the team in another 2 or 3 years because the money that's being lost is not working out, criticism and what have you. He has to sacrifice. He has to trust people around him. He has to get a solid general manager in there. He has to get people around him who are willing to tell him, "No, Michael, this is not the way. I think we should go in this direction. He can't have a bunch of yes men around him. He can't win that way. Now, that once was a great state and a great city for basketball. Charlotte, back, if you remember, the Alonzo Mourning, Larry Johnson, Kendall Gill, those days, early 90s, led the league in attendance. That building was great. It was once a great NBA town. It is no longer that aim right now. Right now, State of North Carolina is purely about college basketball. North Carolina and Duke in particular. So they are not, the NBA is just not that big in Charlotte. And again, Michael Jordan, if I'm a Charlotte fan, I'm a little bit nervous about Jordan becoming the owner. I would be a little bit nervous about this and thinking that, if you think your team is going to get better anytime soon. Now, they have improved again. Steven Jackson signed. Getting Steven Jackson trade was great. That was a good move. I like Tyson Chandler. Charlotte's going to be a dangerous team in the playoffs. I mean, that's all there is. If I were Cleveland, Orlando, Boston, I would not want to see Charlotte in the playoff series. If I'm one of those first four teams. And right now, Charlotte finds herself, basically tied with Miami. For the seventh spot. They came in the last night, sixth spot, half game ahead of Miami. Miami did not play, so Miami and Charlotte are tied for that seventh seed in the playoffs. The seventh seed in the playoffs, whereas Toronto is eighth. But, Jordan, again, you can't question, the Jordan brand. He'll bring some excitement, but, that Michael Jordan owning the team only lasted so long. You got to put a product on the floor that will be worthy of season tickets, getting season tickets, and people coming to the building. We'll see what happens with that. As far as the NBA goes, the playoffs can't start soon enough. If you're a fan of the NBA, the regular season cannot end soon enough. Cleveland is going to have the best record in basketball. They are six games ahead as far as the Eastern Conference races. Who knows? It could be Charlotte. They could play Miami. They could play Toronto. Any one of those three teams, Cleveland could play. If you're a Cleveland fan, Toronto has given them some problems over the course of the season. But if you're a Cleveland player, the ideal matchup for Cleveland would be Miami in the first round. That would be the ideal matchup if you're a Cleveland player. That would be by far and away the easiest between those three teams as far as matchup goes. You don't want to see Charlotte in the first round against Cleveland. That team is very dangerous. They could beat them, but they could push them to six or seven games easily. I think the first four seeds are going to be set between Cleveland, Orlando, Boston, and Atlanta. Atlanta cannot jump Boston unless they win the division, even if they have a better record. And even though they swept Boston, because Boston gets the edge, I think it's nonsense. I think that's one thing NBA should change. If you have a better record than another team, then you should not be penalized for not winning the division if you have a better record than a team that is a division leader. That's the case with Atlanta and Boston. Atlanta and Boston basically have the same record right now, but Boston is leads the Atlantic division, while Atlanta is second in the South division, with Orlando, of course, being first. And Atlanta's not catching Orlando. Orlando is four games ahead of Atlanta. That's not going to happen. So Atlanta's going to have to play. And that means something, because instead of playing Orlando in the second round, Atlanta would have to probably play Cleveland in the second round. Can't be either one of them, so it really doesn't matter from that standpoint. But Boston is going to avoid Cleveland till the Eastern Conference Finals if they get there. Again, a lot of people certainly, including myself, would favor Orlando over Boston in a playoff series. Western Conference Lakers are going to be entrenched in that number one spot. They're four games ahead of Denver. Keep your eye on that Denver, Dallas, Utah thing. I mean, that, you know, that can go any one of a number of ways. Those teams could finish. You know, if you're right now, Denver, Dallas, Utah starting to slip a little bit behind Dallas and Denver and Dallas. And again, if you're Utah, you're doing everything to get to that. They're number four seed right now. If you're Utah, you're doing everything to get to that number three spot. You do not want to see the Lakers in the second round. You get to the number two or three spot, then you don't have to see the Lakers into the conference finals. San Antonio and Portland have an interesting battle for 7th and 8th. Portland, San Antonio is not that involved. A game and a half behind, ahead of Portland. San Antonio is a game and a half ahead of Portland. Portland, again, it's going to be a very interesting first round for the Lakers, regardless of who it is. It's either going to be Portland, which gives them all times of trouble, or San Antonio, which has been a long time rival. I'm not sure when Tony Parker is going to be back. I would say he probably will be back for the playoffs, I would guess. But San Antonio is going to be a dangerous team in the playoffs. I mean, they're going to be, you're Denver, you're Dallas. That's a tough first round matchup trying to play the Spurs, trying to deal with the Spurs in the first round. But again, Phoenix could easily fall to the 8th spot. I mean, don't be surprised. I know they won last night, but they're not that far ahead of Portland or San Antonio. So still a lot to be decided in the Western Conference. The 8th spots are set in the Western Conference. It's just a matter of who finishes. It's a matter of who finishes where. But those 8 spots are entrenched as far as who. You know who's going to be in the playoffs. Oklahoma right now is 5th. Phoenix is 6th. In that Phoenix, Oklahoma City would play Utah in the first round, while Phoenix would play Dallas in the first round. Rookie of the Year, there's been a lot of talk about it as the season draws towards the end. And a lot of push for one, Stephon Curry, to be Rookie of the Year. And the problem I have with that, number one, Stephon Curry has had just a great year. I mean, he averaged about 16 points, 5.5 assists. A game has been great the last couple of months, but the part of my problem is it's only been for the last couple of months. First 2 months of the season, Stephon Curry was average. Tyreek Evans right now is on the cusp of doing something historic. Only the likes of Oscar Robertson and LeBron James have done their first years, and that's averaged 25.5, 20.5 rebounds, 5 assists. Right now he's at 20.3, around 5.5 assists and 5 rebounds. He's been steady throughout. I mean, Tyreek Evans from the start of the season has been near or at the top in terms of being the best rookie. To me, he's clearly the best rookie. I mean, if I'm building a team, it's not even a question that I'm taking Tyreek Evans before I'm taking Brandon Jennings, Stephon Curry, or whoever you want to talk to that mix. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's 6'6". You know, I was watching him earlier this week against the Lakers. I mean, he gets to the rim anytime he wants. I mean, compared to LeBron, like as far as the power, mini LeBron, and he does have some of those characteristics that LeBron has as far as just when he squares his shoulders, forget about it. You cannot stop him from getting to the rim. He would be lethal once he gets a consistent jump shot. But again, to me, it's no debate whatsoever. Tyreek Evans is your rookie of the year, and the guy that you would build, if you're building a team around, there's no question that you take that guy. I mean, he's not a pure point guard. He's not a pure two guard. What he is a guy who's just going to get you 25-5 and going to be a walking triple-double for the next 10 years. That's how good he is. But again, Stephon Curry has been much better than I thought he was going to be his first year. I thought he would struggle his first year out, but he's playing very well right now. Shoots the lights out, can handle the ball, has shown you he has the ability, I think, to be able to run a team. I think he will develop into a pure point guard and be a guy. There's no reason why he can't be. I mean, he's not as good as pure passer, but there's no reason why he can't be a scoring point guard, a guy that can average, 18 to 20 points, and he can get you 6 to 8 assists. The guy's a pure shooter, and I would just let him. I would let him play. I would let him play the point. Why not? There's not that many pure point guards in the NBA right now that are just pure point guard stars that are out there. I mean, the NBA is made of a lot of these do-it-all combination guards that can just flat-out score. Those are the guys that you want on the floor. I mean, Brandon Jennings, not a pure point guard. I mean, is Darren Collison a pure point guard? It's not that many. You have guys who are – you just have a lot of guys who are in point guards' bodies but have scoring mentalities, and that's – you know, that's what Stephon Curry is. I mean, he's a pure scorer who's a pretty good, who's improved as a passer and as a ball handler and has excellent size at that position. You don't put him, unless, depending on the matchup, unless the other team goes real small, you don't want him at the two at 6'3", 185 pounds. You want him, you know, he has excellent point guard size with his height and his ability to shoot the basketball. But again, to me, Tyreke Evans is the rookie of the year. It's not without question. And again, the NBA is in a stretch drive. I mean, the playoffs cannot start soon enough. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, we will take a sneak peek at the baseball season and talk about the toughest play, the toughest division in all of baseball. We'll talk about that and much, much more. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Number 5, Temple, became the latest high seed to fall as they were defeated 78-65 by Cornell in East Region action. First time in 12 years that an Ivy League school has won a tournament game. They will face Wisconsin in the second round. On Sunday. Other East Region action. Wisconsin defeats Wofford 53-49. West Virginia destroys Morgan State 77-50. Missouri over Clemson 86-78. Midwest Region at West Region. Gonzaga over Memphis over Florida State 67-60. Pittsburgh 89. Oakland 66. South Region. Duke 73. Arkansas Pine Bluff 44, Purdue 72, Siena 64, Texas A&M 69, Utah State 53, Cal 77, Louisville 62. Midwest, Xavier 65, Minnesota 54, fourth straight year Xavier has won at least one tournament game. Minnesota, Georgia Tech 64, Oklahoma State 59, Maryland 89, Houston 77, Michigan State gets by New Mexico State 70-67. NBA scores. Cleveland over Chicago 92-85. LeBron James becomes the youngest player in NBA history to reach 15,000 points. He surpasses Kobe Bryant for that honor at the age of 25. Atlanta 93, Charlotte 92 in overtime. Oklahoma City all over Toronto, 115-89. Kevin Durant, big game for him. Boston, 94. Houston, 87. Lakers, 104. Minnesota, 96. San Antonio destroys Golden State, 147-116. Other winners in the association included Phoenix, Sacramento, Portland, Indiana, and the New York Knicks. We are less than 2 weeks again, roughly 2 weeks away from the start of the baseball season. Yankees, Red Sox, April 4th, Fenway Park, Sunday Night Baseball. ESPN, of course, ESPN will have that game. And, again, baseball season is just right around the corner as far as the regular season starts. And, again, when you start talking about baseball and you start looking at these divisions, the one division that you have to start with, obviously, is the AL East. The AL East, again, when you look at the top of this division, you're talking Yankees, Red Sox, and then Tampa Bay. I mean, it's not a division of baseball that can match that kind of strength at the top, in particular Yankees and Red Sox. I like what the Red Sox did in the offseason. Last year, they shot the bargain basement. the shopping bargain basement, and they got burnt. You know, guys like Webby, you know, John Smoltz, Brad Penny, and it didn't work out. This year, you know, they did not overspend at all, but they did not. They really shored up their defense. Getting John Lackey, and I just can't say enough. Won't be able to say enough for this deal. Getting John Lackey changes the whole dynamic of this division. You're talking about adding a guy who knows how to pitch in the postseason, and he's going to be the number three starter on a team, on that team. That's how good this starting pitch is, starting pitching. You're talking about Beckett, Lester, and Lackey. All those games, all those pitches, by the way, have won a World Series clinching game, okay? So you get past those three, you know, you have Dice K, you know, Clay Buchholz. You still have some Wakefield. I mean, to me, to me, Boston has the best pitching staff in baseball. You still have a dynamic bullpen, Papelbon, and what have you, and Del Carmen, Josh Bard. You know, the questions for the Red Sox is going to be offensively, you know, can they get enough out of the likes of David Ortiz? They need bounce back years from Euculus and Dustin Pedroia. They'll have Victor Martinez for the entire year, which is big. You know, Adrian Beltran, you know, still is pretty good, but they get him mostly for defense. Mike Cameron is in for defense, even though he can swing the bat a little bit. But I like the route that they've gone in terms of shoring up their defense and improving their pitching staff. If you can't overwhelm people with scoring runs, you have to take away runs. You just have to give up less runs. And their defense should be great. Who knows what David Ortiz is going to get? I think those days of 40 home runs, 135 RBIs are done as far as he's concerned. As far as Ortiz is, if you get 30 and 100 out of Ortiz, then you should be happy as a Red Sox fan. Again, forget about Ortiz for a second. The two guys that you need to bounce back to be in all-star form as Pedroia and Euculus. Those are two guys. Now, 2 years ago, those guys were MVP caliber. I believe Euculus finished in second or third. Pedroia was, of course, won the American League MVP back in 2008. But you need those guys to bounce back and have you know, similar years to what they had in 2008. Again, we've already talked about the pitching. The Red Sox are going to be a tough out of the playoffs. They're going to make the playoffs. Injuries were standing, and they'll win 95 to 100 games. And they'll be right there with the Yankees as far as competing that division. Of course, with the Yankees, again, the Yankees are going to be right there. You know, they have, you know, as much talent as any team in baseball. Question marks I have about the Yankees again is, at some point, the quartet of Posada, Revere, Jeter, and Pettit are going to get old. I mean, they're getting older, but they're going. I mean, at some point, they're just not going to be able to perform at the level that we've come accustomed to seeing them perform. Jeter is probably the youngest out of that quartet at 35. You know, Rivera is pushing 40. Rivera is pushing 40. Pettit's not getting any younger, of course, 38 years old. So that quartet is going to get old. You still have a question mark about the fifth starter. It's going to be Joba or Phil Hughes. Right now, you probably lean towards Phil Hughes. You know, can A.J. Burnett have a year like he had last year? How are the Yankees going to be able to replace Matt Sui and Johnny Damon out of their lineup? A lot of question marks with the Yankees. You know, I know they got Curtis Granderson. How will he fit in? How will he play under the spotlight of New York? You know, Detroit is a big city, but Detroit is not New York as far as, you know, every game being like Armageddon Game 7 of the World Series. That's how it is in New York. That's how it is in Boston. So, I mean, I think Javier Vasquez was a good pickup for the Yankees as far as their starting pitching goes. They have very good, you know, I expect Sabathia to be great. Again, to me, the questions are replacing those two boppers in the lineup, replacing Matt Sui, replacing Matt Damon, and just complacency. It's very hard to repeat in baseball. It's very hard nowadays. I don't expect the Yankees to repeat, but again, they'll be right there at the end. At the end of the day, as far as the rest of the division goes, I expect Tampa Bay to have a bounce back year. Problem with Tampa Bay is being in a division with New York and Boston. You know that pair. Listen, how New York and Boston both have. You know, the Yankees spend $200 million. Boston spends close to $130 million on his payroll. When you're at Tampa Bay at $68 million. When you're at Baltimore at $61 million. When you're at Toronto at $72 million. I don't know how you compete. I mean, you're at least a good $50 million in terms of being behind the Boston Red Sox. Over $60 million just behind being behind the Boston Red Sox in payroll. I expect Tampa Bay to bounce back, have a bounce back year, play well. But I don't know if they're going to challenge for the division. I think they'll probably challenge for the wild card. But that is a tough place to be if you're a Tampa Bay Braves fan. I would want to go. They're talking about moving. They're talking about realignment yearly, which is ridiculous. It's not going to happen. But if I'm Tampa Bay, I would want out of that division. If I'm Tampa Bay, they're not going to move the Yankees and Red Sox. It's the best thing in baseball right now, so that's not going to happen. But if I was Tampa Bay, I would just want out of that division, just in general. As far as Baltimore goes, I like what Baltimore's doing. They have some nice young talent. They have the catcher. Wieters is good. Marquegas is a very good player. You know, you have some good – I mean, Millwood kind of anchors that staff, and he maybe stabilizes that staff, even though I think he's pretty good. He's not great. He's good. You know, you have some young pitchers that are coming up, and we'll see what they can do. You know, Baltimore is going to – they're going to lose – I mean, they're going to struggle this year. They'll lose, you know, anywhere from 85 to 90 games. But they're on the right track. You like what you – I mean, they have a sense of direction. You know, they're not trying to do this patchwork job. There's a purpose in Baltimore. And that's something you haven't been able to say for a long time in terms of them having a direction, having some type of direction. They have not had that. So, I can go somewhere like Oakland or Kansas City and say, hey, what the hell are these teams doing? What is Oakland's plan exactly? You know, they rebuild every year. They trade young prospects. They develop young prospects. They trade them off. Then, you know, they get back players who are on contract years to trade them. I mean, I don't know what Oakland's doing. I have no idea what the Athletics are trying to do. Baltimore, that's not the case. I exactly know what they're going to do. So there you go with the AL East again. It's all about those two heavyweights at the top. People who get tired of Yankees and Red Sox are not baseball fans. I mean, the best is right now to me is the best rivalry in sports. You have two teams, okay, that absolutely hate each other. Okay, that's the first thing. They hate each other. They're both championship quality. And they both spend a ton of money on players. I mean, how did you not like that? I mean, I don't understand why people are so, you know, down, a little bit down on the Yankees Red Sox. I don't care. If ESPN wants to, you know, I like opening day baseball. Something special about opening day. And I wish opening day was exactly what they said it was going to be, opening day. And that didn't happen, you know, on Sunday Night Baseball. But if you're going to have an opening game Sunday Night Baseball, it has to be Yankees Red Sox if you're going to kick off the baseball season. So I have no problem with baseball going out of its way to promote Yankees and Red Sox. They play 19 times a year. I wish they could play 30 times a year. It is the best thing going in baseball right now. Two teams who, over the course of the last decade, won championships. Again, what happened in 2004, it's the best rivalry. It's the best rivalry in sports right now. And they can't stand each other. I mean, the Yankees and Red Sox organizations hate each other. They hate each other. They respect each other, but they absolutely hate each other. So that's what you love about it. Again, I can't get enough of it. People who say they get tired of people in Chicago, people out on the West Coast get tired of, you know, East Coast bias and 24/7 all talking about Yankees and Red Sox. And, you know, too bad. Too bad. You know, maybe, you know, let the Giants and Dodgers win some championships. Let the Giants and Dodgers win some championships, and then we'll be talking about Giants-Dodgers again. And then both those teams will be good this year, by the way. So I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not knocking those organizations. But I think it's the best thing in baseball right now. It's one of the best things going in sports as far as rivalry goes with those two teams. Ron Washington, as a segue here to some not-so-good baseball news, if you're a fan. Of course, Ron Washington, the Texas Ranger manager, got admitted to testing positive for drugs, cocaine at that. I'm all for second chances. I'm all for second chances, and, you know, everybody makes mistakes. You're a human being and all that great stuff. But it's pretty hard to keep a guy managing your baseball team who sniffed cocaine. To me, if I were owner of the team, I would say, Ron, you know, and Washington knew, you know, forget about how he messed up, but he knew that he thought in his mind, hey, this is probably going to cost me my job. I'm willing to offer my resignation, you know, so be it. So when he keeps his job, to me, it was a shock that he kept his job. And considering that you have a manager got caught to that, there was sniffing cocaine. I mean, drinking alcohol, having an alcohol problem is one thing. Steroid use and all that, that's nothing. But he's got sniff cocaine. I don't know how you sell that to your fan base. You know, again, Nolan Ryan, I give him a lot of credit for having patience. I give him a lot of credit. You know, maybe they fear the racial backlash that it might have been that he got fired. I don't know. To me, if they fired him, I would have no problem with it. None. If they would have fired him. Yeah, the interesting thing about this is the fact that he's now, you know, they've said zero tolerance. You know, Tom Hicks come out, you know, zero tolerance. I would think that he would be on zero tolerance after admitting to sniffing cocaine. You would think that the leash would be short. But again, I don't know how you keep him as your manager. I myself would have probably got rid of him. And again, Washington said all the right things. You know, he was remorseful. That's not even the case. He made some mistake, wasn't it? That is not even the issue here. The issue to me is the fact that he still has a job. And again, you're that Texas organization. I don't know. I mean, maybe Texas, you know, maybe they feel like they're on the cusp of something special and that they really need him to be a part of that. They did win 87 games last year. Not wanting to make a change right now, so close to the season. I'm trying to rationalize this decision and try to make sense of it. But again, if it was my baseball team, he would be unemployed right now. He'd be unemployed right now. I just know, you know, there's no two ways about it. He'd be unemployed and looking for another job. So there you go with the baseball. A couple things that just kind of stood out to me as far as football goes. Just to shift to football just for a quick minute. The NFL wants to, again, try to please the masses for some reason and try and go into this and try to spice it up the playoff, the overtime rules. Now, the owners will take a vote next week on whether or not to allow each team a possession in overtime. This is what you have a problem with. Number one, okay, each team will have a possession in overtime. and a team could choose to kick a, I mean, a team could choose to kick a field goal on that first possession overtime if they won the coin toss. But here's what the rule would be. Okay, if the team got the won the coin toss at the beginning of overtime, if they won the coin toss at the beginning of overtime, then they would have the option of let's say what, kicking a field goal on the first series. If the team would get a second possession, if the team kicks a field goal on the first, on that, all right, let me get it straight. If the team kicks a field goal on the first series, then they would have the option. Then the other team would get another possession. Green Bay, Arizona. Green Bay wins the coin toss. They drive the ball down to at least kick a field goal. Then they kick a field goal. They make it. Then Arizona gets the overtime possession. Then Arizona gets a possession. My problem is, listen, please, to say it's not fair, you know, as far as the coin toss. To say, first of all, the game doesn't get decided by a coin toss, all right? And I understand what the percentages are that, you know, 60% of the teams that win a coin toss don't even win the game. The games are decided because your defense can't stop another team's offense. That's what decides the games. Stop the other opposing team's offense. Okay, if you want to win the game, stop their offense. It's just that simple. Either stop their offense or score on defense. And it takes the whole drama out of the situation. I don't want to see a situation with a game where you be playing multiple overtimes and it becomes like a mini circus. Nobody wants to see that. I don't want to see it. Fans don't want to see it. I don't care what the. To me, this is something that the NFL even shouldn't be thinking about voting on. You know, I don't know what. You know, I don't know where this outcry comes from. We just had the highest rated Super Bowl in NFL history. If there are no rule changes in the overtime, the people are not going to stop watching games. So to me, I would leave things as is, and leaving it a sudden. That's what makes playoff football great. Football in general great when you get to that point in the other game, when you get to overtime, it's just leaving it alone. I don't understand why you have to try. You don't need to spice up the NFL. The NFL, the substance of the product is good as it is. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to sell the NFL anymore. Than it's already being sold. Yeah, it's not MLS soccer. Okay, it's not the XFL. The NFL is the NFL. So again, I don't agree with it. They're gonna vote on it. Out of 32 owners, 24 votes are needed. Out of 32 votes, as far as the owner goes, for it to be passed. I don't think it's going to get passed myself. I don't think it's going to get passed. I don't think it's going to get passed, even though you have owners complaining about the advantage for teams who win the coin toss. I think enough owners out there are old school and we'll say we're going to leave things as is and go from there. So I don't think this is going to get passed. Also, you had a couple of old tennis legends, making idiots of themselves over the course of the week in terms of Agassi and Sampras. And both of them, I believe both of them. You just got to be a little bit smarter if you're both of them. You want to joke is what they, Andre Agassi, you want to get personal. Gee, you call the guy cheap. One minute, PCM is trying to mock Andre Agassi's pigeon-toed walk. And then the next minute, you have Andre Agassi calling PCM is cheap. I if I'm Andre Agassi, you got to be a little smarter than that. And, you know, you want to mock Andre Agassi's, you could have mocked him to serve, or how he wears his short or something. I mean, you could have any, you could have named a number of things that you could have mocked, talking about. You call a guy a cheat. I mean, that's a personal shot at a guy when you're talking about, you know, you're talking about when, how much money he was willing to spend, or he doesn't like a tip. So, I mean, both players got to be smarter in how they are able to handle that. You're at an event trying to support Haiti. Yeah, Federer and Nadal on the court who are like, you know, are looking at those two like they're crazy because they Federer and Nadal are like, you know what's going on here. So, I think Agassi, I blame Agassi for this because he took it to a personal level. Even Sampras was joking. They actually took it personal. Then Sampras took it personal, which is what he should have with that comment. So we'll see how that goes. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call final segment, we will recap. We'll go back to the top NCAA tournament. We'll talk about that. And a couple other things that's still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. Number 5 Temple became the latest high seed to fall 78-65 as they were defeated by Cornell in East Region action. First time in 12 years that Cornell has that Ivy League school has won an NCAA tournament game. Cornell will face Wisconsin in the second round. Come tomorrow. Other East Region action includes Wisconsin 53, Wofford 49, West Virginia 77, Morgan State 50, Missouri 86, Clemson 78. West Region action: Gonzaga over Florida State 67-60, Pittsburgh 89, Oakland 66. South Region action: Duke 73, Arkansas Pine Bluff 44. Texas A&M 69, Utah State 53, Purdue 77, Siena 64, and California 77, Louisville 62. Midwest, Xavier 65, Minnesota 54, Georgia Tech 64, Oklahoma State 59, Maryland 89, Houston 77, and Michigan State 77, New Mexico State 67. Michigan State 70, New Mexico State 67. NBA scores. Cleveland defeats Chicago 92-85. LeBron James becomes the youngest player ever to score 15,000 points. Youngest player in NBA history at the age of 25, surpassing, of course, Kobe Bryant. Atlanta 93, Charlotte 92. Oklahoma City 115, Toronto 89, Boston 94, Houston 87, San Antonio crushes Golden State 147-116, Lakers 104, Minnesota 96. Other winners in the association included Phoenix, Sacramento, Portland, Indiana, and also New York. Of course, there'll be day 3 of the NCAA tournament. Again, if you're a fan of college basketball, you have to be happy where the tournament has gone through the first course or the first couple of days. Thursday, you had a classic day Thursday, just in terms of sheer excitement of the games. Then you had your upsets with Vanderbilt going down and Georgetown going down, and just a bunch of close games down to the wire. Wake Forest. You know, Wake Forest winning a buzzer beater over Texas You had Marquette going down to Washington. Big story to me is the Big East falling by the wayside. Whether it be Louisville, whether it be Georgetown, whether it be Marquette, Notre Dame, all of those teams were inconsistent over the course of the season. All of them. Villanova almost lost, of course. You know, so that if you inconsistent teams have not had their way in the NCAA tournament. Georgetown again, a bad loss for the Georgetown Hoyas. There's no getting around it. There's no sugarcoating it. John Thompson III right now, I don't know what, he certainly cannot be happy, and you cannot like the direction that Georgetown has gone in since they made it to the Final Four 3 years ago. I mean, you look at what has happened over the course of that time period. 2007, they get to the Final Four, and have a great year, magical year, lose to Ohio State. 2008, they lose to Davidson, Stephon Curry. All right, you can live with that. Davidson went out there and almost beat Kansas. Took one shot away from beating Kansas. But then you go to 2009, you don't even make the tournament. And this year, you lose in the first round. Not the track that Georgetown thought they were going to be on after the 2007 season. And again, you lose a game where you just not play any defense whatsoever. Ohio did whatever they wanted to offensively. I mean, they shot the lights out. The guards of Ohio killed Georgetown. I mean, that Barrett, those two guards, I mean, they combined for 53 points. Bassett and the other guard, I forgot the other guard's name, but they destroyed Georgetown. Only Chris Wright did anything. Austin Freeman had a quiet game. Greg Monroe, I know, had 18 and 13, but he also had about 6 or 7 turnovers. Georgetown's defense just was not there. And again, the 3-point shot can be the ultimate equalizer when it comes to pulling off these upsets. And Ohio, made a bunch of threes. They went out there, again, they shot almost 58% from the field and almost 55% from the three-point range. So Georgetown goes down. It'll be a long, long offseason for the Hoya Nation. There's no question about it. Maryland survives against Houston last night after getting off to a slow start in the first half. They pull away 89-77. Maryland will play Michigan State. That's going to be a very entertaining and very close game. Michigan State did not play well last night. They did what they had to do just to get by, but that's definitely a winnable game for Maryland. And again, I like Michigan State's experience. I like Michigan State in that particular game. I picked them in the bracket, so I'm not going to turn back now. But Maryland has an excellent shot to take out Michigan State. Michigan State's not playing well right now. So we will see what happens with that particular game. Second round games for today are pretty good and not great. Everybody's been talking about this. Now again, you thought you were going to have Georgetown, Tennessee. Tennessee's going to play Ohio. I expect Tennessee to beat Ohio. Very interesting game in the East bracket with Kentucky and Wake Forest. A lot of people are high on Wake Forest as far as possibly giving Kentucky a shot because of all the quality bigs that Wake Forest has. I think the SEC is overrated. I definitely think the SEC is overrated. I don't think Kentucky is as good as everybody makes them out to be. I mean, I could see Wake Forest hanging around that game for a half, for 30 minutes, 35 minutes or so. Being in that game with, 5-6 minutes left to play, being right there. I can see that. Also, Washington, Mexico, Old Dominion, Baylor, Kansas State, BYU, Kansas versus Northern Iowa. Not a lot of good matchups in the second round for today. Not a lot of good matchups. The Villanova St. Mary's could be intriguing. A couple people, including Digger Phelps, thinks that like St. Mary's, I'm not ready to quite go there as far as thinking St. Mary's can go out here and pull off another upset in terms of beating Villanova. I think Villanova got it scared and kind of now will step up this game in the second round. I still like Villanova to get picked. I picked Villanova to lose to Richmond, so I definitely would pick them to lose to Baylor. Again, not It will be a very interesting day to see what happens today in the NCAA tournament. Not a lot of big time matchups. There's not a lot of matchups that you know that get you excited. Tomorrow, on the other hand, you should have some very good matchups in the second round. Syracuse Gonzaga will be very entertaining. Butler Murray State should be pretty good. Pittsburgh Xavier is an excellent game. Xavier probably was too. Xavier wasn't seeded high enough to me. You'll have Texas A&M and Purdue. That'll be a good game. That'll be a very good game. West Virginia and Missouri should be interesting as well. Missouri's one of those teams that went under the radar. That's kind of pretty good. We'll see how far. We'll see if Cornell can keep it up, taking on Wisconsin. Again, I like Cornell to make it to the Sweet 16. This Cornell team is better than you think they are. Play a lot of tough teams over the course of the season. Played on the road a lot. I like Cornell going forward to Sweet 16. So I think tomorrow you will have a better set of matchups than you will today. Oklahoma State, Ohio State should be a very good game. Again, I already talked about Maryland and Michigan State. Tomorrow will be a much better set of games than what you will see today. I mean, does Kansas State and BYU, you know, does that get you too excited? You have Old Dominion, Baylor, you know, Villanova, St. Mary's, Washington and New Mexico. I mean, those are not big time matchups. There's a reason why they put Kentucky and Wake Forest on primetime, because they need something to drive that particular time on a Saturday night. So should be a good set of games. Again, we are by time come 7 o'clock Sunday night, 3/4 of the NCAA tournament will be completed. And I'm certainly looking forward to that, and also Sweet 16. Next week, we will have a heavy baseball program along with the NCAA tournament. We'll do even more baseball as the season will kick off. Two weeks from Sunday, baseball will be started. You know, we'll look at another division. Probably I'll go AL West. Check out what's going on in that division. Also talk about some baseball news. Again, also we will look ahead at the Elite Eight. Look ahead at the Elite Eight at the Sweet 16. Will be completed by the time we do our program on Saturday morning. But again, looking forward towards it. Next week we'll probably go back. Probably an hour next week. We'll probably do an hour. Next week, go back to an hour, probably around. Check Facebook, check my Facebook page, and also Twitter page for the time. But I'm thinking probably 11 o'clock, more like 11 o'clock, 11:30. So we'll probably go back towards doing an hour next week on the Saturday morning wake up call. Again, I'm your host, Surreal Quinn. Hit me up at twitter.com/WilliamJuro, and I will see you next week. Have a great week and enjoy the NCAA tournament and enjoy the NCAA tournament and enjoy training baseball. We will be back next week.